sweat technique.
You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. About another hour away from the next women's basketball game. It's on our, Oklahoma's up 38-27 over Iowa. I do like how the women's tournament does it. I don't like how the first round starts on the weekend, but they should do their first and second round Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, while the NCAA tournament is not playing.
I agree to capitalize on as much exposure as you could possibly get. Yeah. Absolutely. I think that the NBA tries to do that as best as they can. Obviously, their schedule is so thorough with the amount of games that it's in, but they try to kind of avoid any of their national telecasts going up against any of the college games.
It's smart that they have games on right now.
I would agree with that part. I don't, and maybe this is a...
What's bad about it?
It's in the middle of the day on a Monday.
That's their best chance to get eyes.
With no college games tonight?
But the men play at 11 a.m. Well,
they'll play tonight. They'll have games throughout the day. They'll have games tonight.
The men play at 11 a.m. on Thursday every year.
Yeah, full slate. This is the second round. Like, there are differences. There are differences. But, no, I think this is their best time to get eyes. Like, they're on the bars and stuff like that. Not that anybody's going to the bar to watch it.
Yeah.
But they're on TV.
You might have a problem if you're going to the bar Monday at 11 a.m. for tip-off.
Yeah.
They're on TV.
I don't like that they – and I know the answer's got to be financial, but I don't like that they have home court until – the Sweet 16, though.
I actually don't hate it.
I think it's a little extra incentive for having a good regular season.
Yeah, I don't hate it. It's like college baseball. Baseball does it. They have
regionals. Now college football does it for the very first round. But
I don't hate it.
I prefer neutral court. I mean, it's not big enough to where I'm gonna not watch or watch because of it. But I don't know. I prefer neutral court for everything.
Okay.
Once you get to the playoffs, obviously.
Jeremy's on the road this weekend.
I wouldn't mind a little Fertitta Center for a second round action.
Of course he wouldn't.
Wouldn't mind that at all.
Instead of going into Indianapolis and facing the Boilermaker crew.
Yeah. Well, it wouldn't be quite that because you would go to the neutral at that point.
Yeah, they still go to the neutral side for Sweet 16
and
beyond.
Not that neutral.
But I'm just saying that's very unfortunate for a one seed to have to play
How
does the committee continually do that though? Like I joked about it earlier that Louisville potentially, if they'd beaten Creighton, would have had a home game against the number one seed as an eight seed in the second round, and they put Purdue in Indiana.
Man,
as a four seed, once you're in a round where you could face a seed higher than you, the whole home court should be thrown out the window.
I think they do kind of thrive on it, but you're right. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what they'll probably never change the first four, and I'm not saying it impacted the game at all. But Xavier had a home game against Texas in the first four.
Yeah, so they could talk to the coach.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, then they hired Xavier's coach.
Yeah.
At
least he's got a clean reputation.
He'll fit
right now. Until he messes up at Texas, they'll have to go back to Xavier again.
Xavier is like his Xavier is where he goes to kind of like wait
it's
for
a
his
safe
job.
Zone. It's dry a safe out. Zone. Yeah, it's where he falls back to.
Hey, Xavier, I'm gonna build my way up through you, and then hey, Xavier, I'm going to Arizona, and then, Arizona fired me. Can I come back to you, Xavier? Oh, Xavier, I'm going to Texas now. Whenever I get fired in 4 years, can I come back to you, Xavier?
You don't burn bridges, Jeremy.
It's like his pipeline.
Yeah, you don't burn bridges.
It's his
AAA. You can always come back home.
The Musketeers.
His brother Archie is at Dayton?
That's right, he is.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Millers can coach, though.
They can coach.
Did you like the hire?
I do. Yeah. Joel and I talked about some of the names that were popping up on Thursday, but he was at the top of my list. I mean, he's obviously had things at Arizona didn't go great. They got knocked out by, I'm trying to remember what low seed they got knocked. It was Buffalo that knocked him out years ago when they had DeAndre Ayton, which DeAndre Ayton was also part of the reason why he no longer has the Arizona job. But yeah, I mean, he has a history of taking Xavier, past the first round into the Sweet 16. He's had more success getting to the Elite Eight, I think, than Texas has had for the last 20 years. So I thought it was a great hire.
I feel like I'm going to have to go MLA Paul.
What'd I do?
I was going to do it too.
Hit me on what I do.
I was just actually going to explain it.
I hate to go full MLA Paul.
So much like
I'll let Joel go MLA Paul.
Kelvin Sampson was very adamant about how to pronounce Gonzaga to the media.
Xavier. Did I say Xavier?
Yes.
Okay, I know
it's Midwest,
Xavier.
It is a hot button that it's Xavier.
Yeah, I know
Xavier.
It's Xavier, but it must have slipped when
it
I was getting
tricky,
into it.
It is tricky, though, because a lot of guys who are named that, they go by Xavier.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm watching the show right now.
Xavier McDaniel.
Yeah.
He's an NBA player that went by it.
Yeah, so it is a little tricky. It's a little tricky, but yeah, Gonzaga. They're the Zags. All right, 713-780-ESPN. I would have hired Royal Ivy, though, Brian.
I would have been fine with that. Those were kind of my two.
Yeah. I would have went Royal.
You thought he was ready, huh? Oh, you and I had talked about it off air, too. I was just a little concerned with lack of head coaching experience.
Well, yeah, no college coaching experience.
And the fact that we know that this is such a all-about-finances thing from NIL and recruiting boosters and, you know, you would hope that amongst his staff that you had the right support system for him, because especially getting into it for the first time, that's a huge undertaking.
Yeah, it feels like those college coaches are going younger and younger too.
Oh yeah,
going young, and they're pulling from the NBA, like BYU. Kevin Young's he's a guy who came from the NBA, associate head coach at Phoenix, spent a lot of years in Philly. I forget the guy who Utah hired, but Utah hired a guy who's been in the NBA. Jay Lucas is not an NBA guy, but he's a very young guy.
And his bloodlines are NBA.
Yeah,
yeah, with John, I the guy in Utah, I want to say was Memphis and Milwaukee, I think, but he's done a heck of a good job for the Jazz.
Yeah, they're going that NBA route. They like it. Alex Jensen.
Yep.
Alex Jensen. He was in Dallas recently.
Okay.
Dallas just can't stop losing people. Traded Luka, then made a worse trade and traded Quentin Grimes to Philly. He's popping off.
You see him getting in that back and forth.
That was funny.
George Yang. It was pretty funny, but I think he could have gotten away with Yang's comments would have hit harder if the run he has been on hadn't happened, but the run he's been on says he can play with just about anybody.
I thought it was pretty good trash talk. Like, that's kind of like elite, sophisticated, next-level trash talk. You get those other two guys back, you're going to be over there in the corner.
If you missed it, Brian, Grimes is at the free throw line. He's already got, like, 20 points. And he's like, man, come on. If Joel's here, you're in that corner of that bench, not sniffing the floor. If Joel and Tyrese Maxey are here, you ain't even getting close to the court, bro. And they're going back and forth.
Yeah, that was some good stuff. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Texter, I'm a lifetime Cavs fan, but do you see the Rockets becoming the Cavaliers of the 80s with the way the Thunder are built for the future?
See, we've had this conversation before. I think the OKC is the best model for how to rebuild, reload, and go on a long run for an NBA team. But along the way, with all Sam Presti did to load up on draft picks and have tons of first and second round picks, he found a way to make a trade to get his signature franchise go-to player in SGA. And once he got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, everything changed. The Rockets are doing a great job getting the young talent that is going to be with them for a long time. The problem is no one has emerged and no trade was made to get you your SGA.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of similarities, but I do think that the biggest hang-up for them to be OKC is an SGA type of player. And it's either – I think it could come two different ways. Trade's the easiest, but I do think that you can develop a superstar.
Yeah, you can. You absolutely can. And there are guys that can. Now, from an Oklahoma City perspective, you already have two all-star players, one you drafted, one you traded for, and now Chet Holmgren getting back to healthy has the potential to be that third for you for a long time, if not more than that. When you look at the Cleveland example that was brought up, the biggest thing was at the right time they went and got Donovan Mitchell. And Donovan Mitchell was the perfect fit because they had made some trades to add some really quality pieces. But until they got the Donovan Mitchell, they couldn't take that next step.
It's Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant's that guy for the Rockets.
No,
I want Kevin Durant to be a Rocket so bad.
Yeah, I would love it at the right price, but I'm not giving up a bunch of the young players and draft picks and giving their draft picks back.
We go about it two different ways with Durant, but I think we're on the same page when it comes to Durant.
Potentially, if it's two years and all you got to do is pay him money and give up minimal, great. If you got to give up multiple pieces currently on your roster and one or two of their first-round picks, which are going to be look like they're going to be pretty good, I'm out.
Yeah, I think we're about on the same page. Maybe you're more realistic on like what the price tag would be, though, and that's why we come about it two different ways. I think this is the second time this year the Rockets lost to the Nuggets without Joker playing. I call him Joker. Not a good sign. I mean, unless you get Denver in the playoffs and they don't play Jokic, like you're not seeing that. You're not seeing Denver without Jokic. You might not see Denver at all. So I don't know if it's not a good sign. I don't know if it matters a whole lot.
And the other thing that I've been harping on too is just finding, whether it's your franchise guy or not, finding the pecking order of the guys in crunch time you could go to. Because to your point, with the Joker and with Murray, you got the two guys that could take you home in any situation, in any game down the stretch. And most teams that are going to be in the playoffs, even the Clippers, when you look at Kawhi and Harden, you got two guys that can take you home down the stretch. With the Rockets, you're like, well, I hope it's Jaylen, and I hope it's it's Alpe, and maybe it's Fred, but it's all it's all said with almost a question mark as opposed to emphatically with an exclamation mark. LeBron and Luka and the guys that I mentioned and the teams, you know Ant Edwards, and you have the opportunity to have a couple other guys on that roster that can do it, but you have that one guy in the driver's seat and two guys in most cases that can take it home for you, and the Rockets don't have that.
How did OKC identify SGA as a future superstar with only a one-year sample size and not out-of-the-park numbers?
Sam Presti has got – look, he's not just really a wizard with trades. He's pretty damn good when you think about the two Jalen Williams and some of the guys that he's drafted that people are like, wait, who? And he seems he hits on way more than he misses on talent evaluation. And he was watching SGA from the time that he was in college and knew the kid could play.
Yeah, I think that's what you would chalk it up to, is good eye. Yep. Like, that's a scouting eye. And look, is there an element of luck that comes with scouting? Absolutely. Yeah, there always is. But if you're identifying players consistently and you're better than most, then you're going to hit on more than other guys. So
it's like the year when we talk about Chet, when it was Chet and it was Jabari and it was in Orlando. The kid from Duke, Banchero. Most people thought the Rockets were going to get Banchero. In retrospect, if you got Banchero instead of Jabari Smith, you are ecstatic. In that draft, I thought the most talented player coming out with the highest upside was Jabari Smith. Mm-hmm. Now, how it's played out, I was wrong.
Yeah.
But that's why the eye you're talking about that I said about Sam Presti is so important, because there's guys that can see the future as well as the now and say, I do think that there's an upside. I do think when he does this or works on this, he could take it to another level, as opposed to, I thought Banchero had reached his ceiling coming out of Duke of what he could be, much like Julius Randle, but Banchero has taken it to another level.
Texture, there wasn't a chance that USGA would be this good. Maybe not this good, but they had to have liked him really good. Or
yeah.
They just liked him. Yeah. Or they just liked him, like, hey, we think this guy's got a chance to be really good. We're going to bring him in, develop him, and then hopefully he turns out to be a good player. I don't think anytime you acquire a player, you're like, well, he's going to give us 30. Like, he's going to be the MVP. No, yeah. You like a guy, you bring him in, and you see how it goes. I think the Rockets did it with Harden. I don't think the Rockets ever envisioned that James Harden was going to be an MVP.
A 1A, right.
Yeah. Like they brought him in to be their best player, but were they like, he's going to win an MVP and, like, have us as a consistent contender in the Western Conference? Probably not.
No, but they knew, unlike his six-man role with OKC and how loaded that roster was, they would be in the mix as a destination he'd want to go to, because he's going to start. And with the roster they had, with Jeremy Lin was the guy they were marketing with, that he instantaneously was going to get the love as being the best player on the team.
The poison pills, Jeremy Lin and then Omar Asik. Remember, they were the same offseason.
Asik had a couple of good years.
He was fine. He was fine. But, like, your best players that year were Jeremy Lin, Omer Asik, Chandler Parsons.
Harden.
And then, well, you brought in Harden.
When you got Harden. I think you're talking about pre-Harden.
And remember they traded for Harden, like, 3 days before the regular season.
Yeah, it was. So, as it went down, Daryl had been talking to Sam Presti about something totally different, and the night before the regular season started,
that's right, I knew it was close.
They were talking to James and they were talking to Serge Ibaka, and they needed at least one of them to take less, and Serge said, I'll take less to stay. James wanted a maximum deal, and they said, hey, Serge took our offer, so we're going to try and trade you. Daryl was the first guy that was on the call list from Sam Presti from the day before. Daryl was like, I'm in. And they made the deal happen overnight. And remember, he went for like 40 in his first two games with Detroit and Atlanta.
That's right. Yeah, and he was really close to the start of the year. Texters, the Rocket, they're letting us know the Rockets have split with Denver this year. They're 1-1. So they haven't lost to the jokerless Denver Nuggets twice this year.
I thought that was a tiebreaker game that they lost last night.
And the Texters are saying 1-1. I guess we could figure this out real quick. Alpe Şengün airballing the three was embarrassing, or the free throw was embarrassing. I don't know how that happens. Like, he's a good enough shooter where he should never be airballing a free throw ever.
No, absolutely right.
They're 1-1.
Okay, are they?
They play a tiebreaker final day of the regular season.
Okay, I knew they only played three times, but I thought at the press conference, I thought someone asked Ime about that being.
He did say something about a tiebreaker, but no, it's not true.
They would have won the season series. That's what it was. Yeah. I lost my train of thought. What was the question?
Just Alpe airballing.
I mean, look, that's what happens with Shaq. That's what happens with guys that have no touch. Alpe's got enough touch now that from a 3-point line, it's one thing. From a free throw, that shouldn't happen.
No, it should never happen. I don't think Brian would ever airball a free throw.
Didn't Nembhard airball his first three the other night?
He did.
Yeah. And then he
Nembhard was talking to us after one of the timeouts. He was talking to Elvin and I. He's like, you guys guard. You guys guard.
Oh,
I was
really?
Like, well, that's kind of cool. I kind of like
okay,
you now.
Okay, let's just get like, out of this
friendly.
Way.
Because
I did mean to mention this to you. Houston has really active hands on the sidelines. Jeremy Branham is part of that mix because Jeremy Branham late in the game made a really good
one?
Save one-handed and caught grab. Another one.
Yep. Yeah, I made a one-handed grab.
Have you added it to the reel yet?
No, there's a few I need to add. I need a new highlight reel altogether. There's been so many. Yeah, one-handed grab.
Did the camera get enough of it? Because it's kind of corner of the screen.
Remember they showed replays of it.
Yeah.
So, like, it was very...
I slowed it down, I was like, boom, he needs that one right
I got
there.
A lot of texts about it, and I'm sitting here like, it's a tight game. The lead is shrinking. I'm like, I don't want any of these texts right now. But, yeah, it was late in the game.
And I respect that because I was the same way.
I was, like,
I wasn't
going to
do
away.
It. Taylor was watching the game with me, and she goes, Daddy, text Jeremy. Yeah. He's right there on the screen. Yeah. I go, I'm not texting him.
Like, if it would have happened first half, like up 12, like, okay, whatever, I'll entertain the text. But so many people started texting me. I'm like, I don't want any of y'all right now. Like, they're like laughing. Ha ha. I'm like, I am stressed.
It's a 1-point game down the stretch. You can't do that.
My hair is graying. Stop texting me. But yeah, I made a one-handed grab, Brian. You didn't notice that.
No. I didn't get to see every second of the game, so it must have been. Anyway, daddy duty,
moment.
But.
Well, Daddy
Duty,
you
should have watched me.
Here, too. I mean, your Lord and Savior made a one-handed grab.
Should have been watching me. Yeah, it's a little strong. That's a little strong.
Daddy.
That's a bit of a stretch.
That's
a reach.
Way stretch.
That's a bit much there, Blinkers. That's a bit much. All right, 713-780-ESPN, HRNP, listener line. I think the Astros are going to look either really, really smart or really, really dumb. It is the Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. You can look really, really smart if you can own well in your life. Own Well is here to help you save some money and eliminate some stress. A lot of homeowners are overpaying on property taxes, and it should not be you. Don't let it be you. Head to ownwell.com right now. Sign up for their services in less than 3 minutes. You're going to get their experts fighting for you. Cutting-edge technology that's the best in the business that's going to start saving you money with no upfront cost. Put your property tax savings back in your pocket, reinvestment, have a nice dinner, maybe a little vacation. However you want to spend that savings, you do you. OwnWell handles it all from start to finish and delivers top results. No upfront cost. You're only going to pay if you save money. So there's zero risk and all reward. Only pay if you save. You can't beat that. OwnWell levels the playing field, eliminates the concern of paying too much on property tax for the everyday home and property owner like you and me. 86% of OwnWell's customers receive a reduction, with the average customer saving over $1,100. Again, no risk, all reward. Why wouldn't you do this? The deadline to protest, May 15th. Don't run out of time. Save money on your property taxes with OwnWell. Sign up in less than 3 minutes. Start your protest today at OwnWell.com. That's OwnWell.com.
Listen to ESPN 97.5 and HD, 97.9 HD2. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
So I think the Astros are going to look either really smart this year or really dumb. And I don't think that there's any in between. I don't think that there's any wiggle room to land somewhere in the middle. Because the Astros have been very courageous. This is more than just a Cam Smith conversation, but they've been very courageous with a bunch of different moves. Look, if Cam Smith makes the opening day roster, which, by the way, they have an exhibition game today or whatever, they're batting him sixth, I think it was. I have to pull it back up again. But he's in right field, not DeZinger. Like, this looks like an opening day lineup whenever I look at this. Matt Kaharwa covers the Astros for HoustonChronicle.com. He tweeted this out a little bit ago. So the Astros lineup today, Altuve is in left. Isak Paredes is batting second and third. Yordan Alvarez is your DH batting third. Did I say Paredes is third? Paredes is batting second. Altuve, Paredes.
Right.
Okay, Altuve, Paredes, Alvarez. No Christian Walker right now because he's still recovering from this oblique, which, by the way, make sure he's 100% back. Yiner Diaz is catching, batting fourth. Okay, like if Walker was playing, he's probably ahead of Yiner, but he's not playing. So, okay, Yiner bats fourth. That makes sense. Jeremy Peña is playing shortstop, batting fifth. Cam Smith is in right field batting sixth. Now, Zach DeZinzo is playing for the injured Walker at first base, batting seventh. Brendan Rodgers at second. And then Jake Myers is in center field batting ninth. That feels to me like your opening day lineup. Now, insert Christian Walker for DeZinzo, move Christian Walker up to the cleanup spot, bump everybody else down.
What about Dubon at second instead of Ryan?
Maybe, yeah. Maybe. But, like, that's not, like, maybe. Maybe I don't know who won that job.
Maybe depending on the pitching, too.
Yeah, like...
Like who they're facing.
Or even who's on the mound for them. Like, you play your
that's
best defender with your ground ball. Well,
oh, for the Astros.
For
gotcha.
The Astros, yeah.
Yep.
And it's probably both a factor. Like, they're probably both a factor. The Rodgers-Dubon thing will be interesting to see who gets the most starts at second base. And they've made, like, roster moves. Like, they told Singleton he's not making the team. Ben Gamble was granted his release. Logan Van Wey, all that stuff. But it... reads to me, and we saw this tweet too. Was it Jim Bowden who tweeted this? That
yeah, I think
the
right,
Astros
yeah.
haven't made it official yet, but it's trending in the direction that Cam Smith's going to be the Astros opening day right fielder. So we have another clue that indicates that. We have a tweet from Bowden. We have the Astros moving Cam Smith to right field. They haven't sent him down to minor league camp yet. And then you look at what is probably a dress rehearsal for opening day. And Cam Smith's the guy in right field. DeZinzo's the guy that's filling in for the guy that's hurt. And Cam Smith's batting ahead of DeZinzo. So that, to me, is an indicator that Cam Smith's going to make the opening day roster. Like, I'm not 100% sure on that, but it kind of trends and is leading that way. So, again, the Astros are going to look either really smart or really dumb when it comes to Cam Smith if he starts on the opening day roster. Because if he's really, really good, well, the Astros look like geniuses.
Yes.
They look like savants that they were willing to have the courage of, you know, identifying a player who had five games above high A ball and starting him on the opening day roster. Not only that, but he's in right field and he's batting in the seventh spot, assuming that Christian Walker is back.
Keep going. And they look like geniuses in the trade for Kyle Tucker
sure.
in getting a guy that not only could be a franchise guy down the road, but makes your opening day roster from the minute you get it.
So if Cam Smith makes the opening day roster, that is incredibly bold. Trading Kyle Tucker is incredibly bold. Moving the greatest Astro that you've ever had and one of the best offensive second basemen in the history of the game to a new position at the age of 35 is incredibly bold. So the Astros have potentially three moves that are very, very bold. It takes huge cojones. Altuve, Trey Tucker, potentially Cam Smith. So if the Astros win by doing this, and like, let's say they win the division, everything holds, Altuve's in left, Cam Smith looks good, the Tucker trade looks fine, all of that. If the Astros win the division after doing all of those things, they're going to look really good.
Mm-hmm.
Dana Brown in his front office is going to look very good. Joe Espada managing in his second year is going to look very good. But the wiggle room isn't great, because I think if the Astros go like 85 and 79 and, or that's, you can't do that, 85 and 77. If they go 85 and 77 and they lose the division by four games, like that's very little wiggle room. That's not that big of a difference. But if they lose the division after all of those bold moves, they're going to look really, really stupid. And where's the in-between? Where is the middle? I don't see it. So either this works, they get celebrated and applauded, or you finish second in the division and everybody's going to talk about how dumb Dana Brown and Joe Espada are.
Yeah, the only thing that I would throw into there that's a caveat is the fact that you do have ways where you can wiggle your way out of it so it isn't so drastic hit or miss, where if Altuve fails early, there's still a landing spot for him at second base. If that means that a DeZinzo then goes to left, and if he, you know, and if they hit that right too, that they can save some grace there as well. But yeah, it's going to be tricky. They do have some other options, but it does look like it is going to be a boom or bust situation, and they're leaning on the young guys that we were wondering about if both would make the roster. Because DeZinzo right now, you would think if they want to stick with what their plan had been, which was that he, if he's not going to start, that he's going to play in the minor leagues to get more at-bats. But it seems like he's going to be on this roster regardless.
I don't know. Like, I don't see Cam Smith and Zach DeZinzo making the team.
I still think that they already broke camp, but I think that both are going to make the team to start the year.
Okay. Let's play out the scenario, because I do think that there's a shot. And, like, my roster projection had both of them on there, kind of because I want to talk it into existence.
Okay.
We know that Espada wants to give young players everyday at-bats.
Yes.
Cam Smith is not going to be on the big league team and sit the bench half the time. Like, right. He would have to play. Otherwise, you're really talking about stunting his development. So, he's your right fielder. If he's on this team, he is your mm-hmm. starting right fielder. So, how is Zach DeZinzo getting regular at-bats?
Well, that's the thing. The only thing that I can think of is between he's going to be a guy platooning and you know.
Where?
Well, I was going to say infield and outfield.
Where? Like, left field, he's going to play instead of Altuve? Like, third base, he's going to play instead of Isak? DeZinzo can't play second. Isak didn't play any games at second. Like, I don't see a path for DeZinzo getting regular at-bats. Now,
he could play third, depending on what you want to do with Paredes. If Paredes wants to play some second because he has in the
past. He hasn't played there, though.
But he hasn't played there for the Astros, right.
And they've – no, I'm talking about in spring. He hasn't even played there at spring.
Right.
Like,
no,
the most that
saying,
he was doing at second base was, like, turning double play balls.
But I'm basing a lot of this off of Dana looking – seemingly in the interviews that he's done recently, being more concerned and focused on just having the best offensive lineup out there than he has been about defense.
I don't think that that's true because – If they were trying to get the best offensive lineup out there, Jose Altuve is your second baseman.
Well, but within reason. I think that because of the fact that we were talking about 7-8-9, and we know that from the standpoint of with two ground ball pitchers at the top of your rotation, you still have to have a really quality infield. But we knew that the biggest question mark was 7-8-9 and how the outfield played out. And 7-8-9 was going to be filled by Chaz, Jake, and somebody else. And I think that that's why he said that, you know, from an offensive perspective, they have the ability or the potential to put up a really, really good offensive lineup. I think that that jeopardizes defense in the outfield more so than in the infield.
But even if you do that, you're not doing that until a couple of months into the season.
You mean by having both guys out
by
there?
By moving out Altuve to second. You're not making that change in a week or two weeks.
Having both young guys out there. Yeah, you're probably right. Look, I think that Altuve is going to have every opportunity to fail.
If you have both young guys out there, where's Altuve playing?
I believe that they could, because he's played first, he's played third, he's gonna play, they want him to play some outfield, that he could be more of a limited Dubon in the fact that when you're giving guys days off, if Altuve goes to DH, you know, it gives him a little rest and has some DH so he's not overstressed playing left too much, that there are opportunities, but it's gonna be at multiple different defensive positions.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying it's gonna happen. But I really believe that, aside from what Espada said, I just have a feeling DeCenzo's going to make this opening day roster.
If he makes the opening day roster, Joe Espada has to backpedal off of his,
yes,
I'm
does.
Going to play my, if my, I want my young players playing every day. Now, look, that was said a month ago. Maybe it's, well, we just like his bat so much that we want him to start, you know, at one position one time a week. So if left field, you get one start. First base, you get one start. Cam Smith gets a day off once a week. Third base, you play there. So that means it's four games a week. Maybe he's pinch hitting for Jake Myers late in the game. Like, that is regular-ish at-bats. That's not playing every day.
No, but that's what I'm
but
thinking.
But it's regular-ish at-bats. Yeah.
That it's not like you're just a super – you're a utility guy sitting the bench most of the time. If you get four starts in each calendar week, I think that's more than enough to keep him on the roster.
That, to me, is the only way he's on the roster, mm-hmm. though. Like, because and that still is a bit of a hedge to what Espada said. That's not everyday at bats, so it's a little different than what Espada said, which they change their mind all the time.
I was gonna say, Joe went to the Dana Brown School of press conference versus reality, so he can do the same thing.
I've learned that Espada is a little bit more truthful with his words.
Oh, he is.
But maybe Dana Brown plays rank here and says, "Well, you're carrying DeCenzo, and DeCenzo could also be your pinch hitter off the bench against right-handed pitching." Well, what do you mean? He's right-handed. DeCenzo has reverse splits, mm-hmm. and Singleton has been cut. Gamble's been cut.
That's
so,
what
like,
I was gonna
you've
say.
Gotten rid of two of your lefties. So, like, that does open up a spot for Zach DeCenzo to be your pinch hitter and playing every day. Todd the Show says people are forgetting about Caratini. No, not forgetting about Caratini.
Big lefty guy.
And Caratini has been a fixture on this roster all season long. Like, Caratini's spot on this team has never been in question. That's why he doesn't come up as much, because he is a fixture. He's your backup catcher. He's going to get a few at-bats late in games for the Jake Myers of the world when there's a righty coming up. But now, because Gamble is gone and Singleton is gone, what do you do with that final bench spot? Is it DeCenzo and you kind of hedge and backpedal off of your, we want our young players to play every single day, or are you keeping a Cooper Hummel or the Zach Short guy?
Right.
No, I'd rather be DeCenzo too.
And I think Caratini has kind of expanded his position to where you just knew when they got him, he was going to be the backup catcher, to the fact that now, because he was a valuable commodity as a left-handed, like you mentioned, a left-handed late inning bat, to a backup first baseman that can play first base when Walker wants to sit and depending on what they want to do, and because you let go of Singleton, that I think that Caratini becomes a left-handed bat off the bench, your backup catcher, and your backup first baseman.
Yep. 713-780-ESPN. I want to talk about this wiggle room, though. This the Astros are going to look really, really smart or really, really dumb. I don't think that there's any room in the middle. Dissect it a little bit more. 713-780-ESPN. It is the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN at 92.5. You and your business always look real smart if you have HR&P in your life. Human Resources and Payroll. It's Cougar owned by my colleague, Go Cougs, Chris Fisher over there. Bunch of fine people at HR&P. Business owners, let HR&P help you. They can help you with HR compliance, benefits administration, payroll, onboarding. HR&P can help in one of those areas or all of these areas. There's no boxes with HR&P. It doesn't matter how small, doesn't matter how big the job. HR&P completely customizes a plan for what you and your business needs. You have a problem, you have an issue, you want to take a little off your plate, HR&P is going to find a way to help you. And they do it in a way that is unique. Technology meets service. They have the best technology. You're going to love that, but you're going to fall in love with their service. Guaranteed fulfillment. You'll never talk to a stranger. You'll be talking to someone who knows you and they know your business needs. Give them a call at 281-880-6525. Let HR&P customize a plan for you. 281-880-6525 or check them out on the web, hrp.net. That's hrp.net.
This is ESPN 97.5. Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Another Astro baseball podcast. Joe George and I doing Inside the Icebox. It'll be out at 6:15 today, by the way, on our YouTube.
Just you jump.
What was that?
Just you jump.
Who said that? I forgot.
That was Glenn Davis saying, just you, Joe.
Oh, yeah, whenever he thought he was Paul. Just you, Joe.
Just you, Joe.
How did you have that ready?
It's on my quick start page.
That was excellent. That was good stuff. I don't know anything about these quick start pages. But look, like going back to the bravado moves, Altuve left, Tucker trade, potentially Cam Smith on the opening day roster. If the Astros win and win the division, I think it's going to be applauded, and people are going to look at Dana Brown and Joe Espada in a favorable light.
It'll be up for GM of the year.
And I think if they lose the division by two games, look, the wiggle room's not much. Like, if they win the division by one game, oh, they're the smartest guys in the rooms. They lose the division by one game. They miss the playoffs. These morons don't know what they're doing. I don't see the middle ground. And I know what you said, that they allow themselves for wiggle room if they move Altuve to second, but it doesn't change the fact that you already did it. You're never like putting the toothpaste back in the tube that you did it. You're never putting the toothpaste back in the tube that you traded Tucker. If Cam, like, worst case scenario with Cam Smith, and I don't think this is going to happen, is that Cam Smith starts on the opening day roster, goes 1-for-60, and it's like, uh-oh, did they screw it up and ruin this guy? That, to me, is worst-case scenario. That's why there's no wiggle room. That's why there's no, like, oh, it was a pretty good year, or they look okay, or we're fine with them. At the end of this season, you're either going to be in with Dana Brown and Joe Espada, think that they're intelligent, you're in good hands with them for the foreseeable future, or at the end of the year, you're going to be like, I don't trust these guys one iota.
Now, a couple things on that. Do you think that Joe gets roped in with Dana if, indeed, that's how it plays out?
No doubt. No question.
But
no question.
Why? But Dana, it seems like this
is the manager.
Dana driven in terms of, you know, making the changes and then, you know, making the decision to get Cam up there right away and doing some of the things that they've already done. Not to mention the fact that Dana, for all that he did do, is the guy that didn't get more outfield help and get another bat in the lineup. So from all those things, I think it all points at Dana before it would point at Joe. And if Joe just manages who he's got and does the best with what he has, and especially if they miss it by a narrow margin, I just feel like that would be more reflective of Dana alone.
You're hedging a little bit, because whenever we talked about who's responsible for Altuve moving to left field, you gave a good amount of value to Joe Espada weighing in on that decision.
I did?
Yeah.
I don't remember that, but
last week when we had this conversation, we were talking about, like, who do you think was involved with Altuve moving to left?
I think Joe was involved.
I think he was 100%,
but I think
general manager. But the fact that we don't know, and the fact that there is some sort of, you know, conversation that Espada had his hand or could have had his hand in it. That's why he gets lumped into this big Astro group.
I think that people could still look favorably at Joe Espada overall, as opposed to this is clearly going to be one that Dana's going to wear either way. To where if they only miss it by a game or two, and
if they miss it by a game or two, Espada's going to be looked at in a favorable light at all in some way.
I think that they're I don't think they're going to be done with him. I don't think they're going to put him on the hot seat unless it was managerial decisions got him there.
Not Crane, the fan base.
The fan base may not. I don't think that they're going to be completely done with him because I think that they understand that if you look at it the way I look at it from my perspective, it seems like even if Joe was in the discussions, that this was all Dana-driven. And the moves that were or were not made were all Dana-driven. So I would think that Dana would be clearly on the hot seat. I would think that Joe Espada, if they were in it and only lost the division by a game or so, I don't think that people would have the same kind of negativity and, like, hot seat approach to Joe Espada.
Yeah. I mean, there's no way of really knowing this unless it happens. Mm-hmm. It's just totally, like, kind of guessing and predicting what would. I think that they would be lumped in together. And I also feel like there is a healthy amount of disdain for Dana Brown and Joe Espada that already exists. I don't think that Dana
would say more Dana than Joe. And I think that the fact that Joe was able to be the manager that dug them out of the hole that they had to dig out of last year. And granted, you did have, you know, veteran players on this roster and you had, you know, things that went your way. I think that we both said that this is the year that Joe gets to be judged all by himself. But I also think that if they're in it till the bitter end, that Joe can survive this a lot easier than Dana can.
We're going to have to approval rating this.
Okay.
We'll put out an approval rating and then discuss it tomorrow on the show. Cause I really don't know. Like, I mean, if I had to guess an approval rating on Dana Brown right now, and we'll get some information and some data, collect some data to support this conversation more tomorrow, I think it would be 50-50 on Dana.
See, I was 50-50, but then I started thinking about the fact that he constructed a plan B for Bregman before Bregman even made a decision. So he had the backup plan ready to go.
Yeah, but I don't think that's looked at in a favorable light. I don't think that letting Bregman leave, I think it's smart, but I don't think that if you just polled the majority of Astro fans, that letting Bregman leave, and yes, you end up with a good prize in Isak Paredes, although you did have to trade Kyle Tucker to do that, I don't think that that's looked at universally amongst the fan base as a positive.
Universally is tough, right? I think.
But that's the poll we're talking about.
No, but I think that not that there would be the majority, but I think that the winning split would be people believe in Dana Brown because you didn't get caught with your pants down when Bregman made the decision that he made. You saw what Bregman signed for, and it was way more than what anybody, especially you and I, were willing to give. And then on top of that, he was willing to do what this organization hasn't done previously, trade a guy that you know is going to walk eventually to get players that end up helping you to be able to kind of keep this team relevant and flip the switch, as opposed to, again, sitting there waiting to see what happens and then going, well, what's next? What are we going to do now? To where I think that Dana at the start of the season it's better than 50%. If it fails and some of these other things that they've done subsequently since then with Cam Smith and decisions and didn't get an extra bat and things like that, that by the end of the season, it could be very much significantly below 50%.
Yeah. But if we're taking the,
I don't
see a path where they missed the playoffs and Joe Espada and Dana Brown are both looked at favorably.
I think there'll be some negativity towards Espada, but I think the majority of the fire and the finger pointing is going to be at Dana.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, context matters. Like, if Joe Espada is just managing the games poorly, it's going to flip that a little bit.
Right.
So I'm 50-50 on Dana approval rating, predicting it. I think it's going to be lower on Espada. I think Espada is more 40-60 amongst the Astros fan base than Dana. I think Dana, whenever we get this information to talk about tomorrow, I think Dana will be looked at slightly more positively than Joe. I think Dana is going to be about 50-50. I think Joe's going to be about 40-60.
How they lose matters and how they
don't
make it
matters. Right now, though.
We're talking about right now?
We're taking the poll today. They're going to vote on it.
I'll be curious because I don't think that's the case. I don't think that Joe's going to be looked at unfavorably right now. I think that people believe with this team, with this iteration that they're breaking camp with, that I think that people believe Joe Espada can lead this team.
So you think that Joe will be higher than Dana in the approval rating?
Well, Dana,
when we conduct this between now and tomorrow.
I think Dana probably, overall approval rating, Dana's probably going to be higher because until they fail, he made moves, had backup plans, and did the things that I said to where he did more things that people can tangibly hang on to than what we know of Joe Espada.
You think so, Joe will be where?
I think he'll both be positive. I think Joe will be maybe like 60-40 in his favor.
And then Dana?
And I think Dana's going to be more like 70-30 right now because he made enough moves, had a backup plan for Bregman, and traded Tucker.
I'm eager to see that. I'll wait till after the show, though, so it doesn't distract us. We'll go out to the HRMP listener line on the other side. Some of the Hive are already weighing in on this with their opinion on Dana Brown and Joe Espada. What is the approval rating for the GM? What is the approval rating for the manager? Fill up in the text line as well. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. The approval rating at Two Creeks Crossing Resort is through the roof. In fact, it's not even through the roof because they don't have roofs there. It's the great outdoors. If you're looking to escape the rat race for the weekend, the hustle and bustle of the job, traffic, your co-host, your producer, whatever is calling you stress, I have the best weekend idea for you. Two Creeks Crossing Resort on Lake Livingston. Escape the city. Enjoy the relaxing great outdoors. Book your stay at twocreekscrossingresort.com right now. Whether it's the open green spaces that catch your eye, the wildlife, the majestic mature trees, and some of the best fishing in Texas, you got to get out to Two Creeks Crossing Resort on Lake Livingston. One of the amazing perks, too, is it's only 90 minutes away from Houston. You can escape the city without traveling too far at Two Creeks Crossing Resort on Lake Livingston. This is the problem with some of your vacations. You book these vacations, takes you 8 hours to drive there, 8 hours to drive back, and you've wasted the weekend. Or you have to hop on a plane, check the luggage, added expense there, added time there. Don't have to worry about that at Two Creeks Crossing Resort. It's an hour and a half away. Hike their 92-acre property. Kayak on their rivers, their creeks, pickleball courts. How about just hanging out by the pool with a drink? I'd love to do that, too. Two Creeks Crossing Resort also loves to take care of their visitors. Barbecue cook-off one weekend, crawfish boil the next. You're always going to have a great time at Two Creeks Crossing Resort on Lake Livingston. Whether it's glamping, cabins, tree houses, pull up the RV, they have the perfect stay for anyone. Book your weekend escape now at twocreekscrossingresort.com. That's twocreekscrossingresort.com.
Loaded, ready to rule.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Texter saying, Mailbag Monday, question mark. It's coming. We'll get to it when we get to it. Other things that are ahead of the schedule. We don't go at Mailbag Monday every day, 4:30. We're not cookie cutter, the Killer Bees. We'll do Mailbag Monday when we get to it. We're not cookie cutter.
Looks like you're getting a little attitude right now.
Benchmark radio ain't for us. Used to be. It ain't anymore. 713-780-ESPN. Plus, Phillip's on the line. We got to get to Phillip. You want Mailbag Monday or do you want Phillip?
Bat flip.
You want Phillip?
You're asking us or you're asking the listeners?
It was a rhetorical question.
Yeah, it definitely might be two.
I put
answers.
A lot of pressure on Phillip. Phillip, yeah, I hope you're up to it. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Phillip, you're in the Hive. Make it good.
All right. It's a beautiful day. I'd like to paint an equally beautiful picture of the Astros' upcoming season.
Perfect.
So I want to get rid of all the negativity. DeCenzo becomes a legitimate everyday right fielder, competent, quality bat, maybe not all-star, but good enough to start. Isaac Paredes has an all-star season. At the all-star break, he's a rep for the Astros due to maybe just park factors and hitting a lot of home runs, but he's an all-star third baseman. Cam Smith is crushing AA and AAA so well that they feel forced to move Paredes at the deadline for a future second base or center field prospect and play Cam Smith at third. And we accept the fact that we have two guys in Yordan and Altuve that both should be DHs. But you know what? Altuve is going for 3,000, and we all know what ultimately is going to have to happen, which is he's going to be the primary DH. And so I think by the end of the year, Altuve is the primary DH, and Yordan is left field at home every game and maybe a little bit on the road, depending on the parks. And he plays Altuve plays second one or two times a week. And everything works out fine in the long run.
Okay, Phil.
Thanks, guys.
A lot of ifs and buts, candy nuts. Isak's a starter in the All-Star game, and then you're trading him at the deadline there, Philip.
I don't. I think it's a little bit. I think it's grandiose. Let's put it that way instead of far fetched.
Well, Philip is our most grandiose scholar. Yes. I will give Philip credit there.
Pratis would have what 2.5 years of team control left at that point
after he was
just
an All-Star.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting to. Like after he just made the All-Star game, feels a little bit. I don't know.
Sell him at his highest.
Yeah,
I see where Philip's coming from.
I love the positivity.
Feels erratic
from bat flip. But I'm not. I can't see it happening.
Okay, you're calling Philip Bethlehem. I get you.
Bethlehem.
I like it. I like it. Especially now that Singleton's gone. Where are we going to get our Bethlehem from? I hope Isak Bethlehem.
This was the first call from Bethlehem in the last 3 or 4 where he didn't have the lineup answer, but he kind of did.
Yeah. Tyler and Connor said Philip is not a nut, is not a nowhere ball. Come on, that's not true, Tyler. Philip knows ball.
But in this scenario, Cam's going to double A.
Yeah, he just had DeCinzo and Wright to start the
which
season.
I think that's in play.
It's in play. I feel like it's less than 50-50, but it's in play.
So you think Cam's in running and Wright?
I don't think there's any turning back right now. I think Cam's starting the year in right field.
I do, too.
You are both going Cam and Wright.
Completely.
The Bowden tweet kind of makes me think that's going to happen, too. Like, I don't see him tweeting that and then it being false. Because reporters are never wrong. They're never wrong. Especially everything you read on the internet is true.
Chandler.
So, I think that,
I don't know. Aaron Wilson was wrong twice.
Oh, it's a good point.
I mean, you can't catch my sarcasm there. My tongue was firmly into it.
But Chandler Rome was right about Verlander.
He was eventually.
Yeah.
But this isn't Chandler Rome.
No.
This is Bowden. And there's always a 10% chance at least that somebody's bluffing. Texture, the problem is nobody trusts either anything either one of them says, Browner or Spada, but trust the back of the baseball card.
You know, the back of his baseball card.
In my mind. Texture says that Dana is that guy. I like Dana. If you could only pick one, Dana or Joe, ooh, which would you – like, you could get rid of one at the end of the year, but the other one you're keeping for the next 7 years. Is it Dana or is it Joe?
It's Dana because I think there's other managers that would love and could manage this team.
It's Dana for me. I would take
Dana. I think it's definitely
and
Dana.
And I like Joe. I think Joe's the most interesting manager in all of baseball. But I think he's kind of mid.
If he keeps his hand off of his face and lets a couple of cuss bombs and gets ejected a few times.
I think Carl Everett had the best bat flip. Carl Everett was a character, man. He had the close stance left-handed. He had the open stance right-handed and didn't believe in dinosaurs, Carl Everett.
He also didn't believe in shirts under golf vests at golf tournaments.
Did he really?
He showed up at the Sunshine Kids golf tournament with just the vest on with the guns out.
Or just like the oil and gas vest with
oil and gas OG vest, no shirt at all underneath.
Texture,
well, gotta flaunt it.
What does Michael Schwab have to say about all of this? He says hashtag pay the man, I bet. He's trying to get Cam Smith a multi-billion-dollar deal right now.
He wants to be right on Cam Smith, right?
Oh, he's already dropping receipts as if he already made the team. Which is dangerous because he hasn't already made the team.
Wait until it happens first.
And look, maybe
he does. Bad beats are bad beats.
Maybe he does, but he's flaunting. Like, every time somebody reports that he might make the team, Schwab will, like, quote to him and be like, see, I was right. Not yet.
Very close. Not yet.
Like, the chances are higher now than they were then, and maybe you were ahead of schedule, but you have not been proven right yet.
Yeah, it feels like a dangerous move.
It's a little dangerous.
Because you're giving yourself even more ammunition for old takes exposed if they decide to get involved.
It's a little premature. You might ultimately be right, but it's a little premature. Texture, there's no way that fans will be cool with anything if we don't make the playoffs, and then even be blaming the stadium name change. I hope not. It doesn't go on. The name doesn't have anything to do with
it. That would be lame.
Spot is a backup manager at best, and he's a robot. That's why he's hired. Oh, he's calling Joe Espada a puppet. That's a hot take.
That is. That's dicey.
I think
there might be some truth to that.
I think we've heard that before because people have made that claim with Dana being kind of a puppet for Crane, and then it kind of passes down the line with Joe being a puppet for Dana.
Oh, a lot of GMs hire puppet managers.
Without question, because then it's not as difficult to make them all the moves they want to make as we saw with Dusty when Dusty had pushback.
Especially now. In the day and age of analytics, and they want to call, like, there's even some GMs that hand their manager the lineup, and, like, it's pretty common now that people talk about that. Texture, this outfield is crap, and it's on Dana, so there's an anti-Dana text. Huh. How bad was Altuve defensively last year, actually? He was minus 13?
15,
defensive
I think
run saves?
13 or 15.
Somewhere around there.
And it's gone down every year.
So the answer is bad, Texter. He was really bad. And look, I don't think he's going to be good in left, but I think he'll be less bad in left than he was at second. We'll see. Caleb, if this is a dress rehearsal for opening day, I don't like not seeing Chaz out there somewhere. It's kind of interesting. Caleb's like the last Chaz chomper because a lot of people are off the Chaz train.
I think
a lot
they
of
are.
People want him gone, traded.
Think the ideal people that were in Chaz's corner were thinking he's going to have a really good spring. He's going to show people before we even start playing meaningful baseball and start the season that that was just it wasn't the real Chaz last year. And unfortunately, the opposite has occurred to the point where I think all people are pretty much done with Chaz.
Yeah. And like some people are saying, cut him. You don't cut him. Like maybe you send him down to Sugar Land. You don't cut him. I think he'll be on the opening day roster, though, because he can play all over, solid defender. And I still think they're hoping he can revert back. But if Cam's your right fielder or DeZinzo's your right fielder. Chaz is a fourth outfielder.
Mm-hmm.
Chaz is a fourth outfielder, backup center fielder. Maybe he plays some games in center.
And then depending on how Jake plays or doesn't, if he doesn't play well, then Chaz could become your starter in center field.
Right on cue. I think Myers will have his best offensive season to date this year. Just throwing out there my opinion. I hope so. Hope you're right. This has to be Keith. Mitch Haniger should start every day in left field. Over Altuve? Haniger should start over Altuve, who got cut by one of the worst offensive teams in all of baseball? Come on. You just made the list.
You just made the list.
780 ESPN. Let's get to Mailbag Monday. The people just want it. The people are craving it, or at least a person is craving it. 713-780-3776. Mailbag Monday with the Bees. Ask us anything on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.